Hello and welcome back to Catching Up on Capitol Hill, a series in which we discuss the latest in tax legislation and in tax policy. I'm your host, John Gimigliano. Good to be back with you as we take a look at the dueling budgets between the Republican House and the Republican Senate, and also look at what those budgets might tell us about a tax bill that could happen this year. We were last with you in February talking about the Senate's novel approach to the tax bill using what they call current policy baseline. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, you should. And we're going to come back to this notion of current policy baseline later today. But since February, you haven't missed a whole lot as Congress has been consumed with funding the government and avoiding a shutdown on March 14th. Well, Congress did avert a shutdown, funding the government through September 30th, allowing them to now turn their attention back to tax. Well, as soon as they get back from their current recess, that is, but they will soon. But before we can talk tax, we have to talk budget. And to help me do that, we are joined by our friends today, Jen Acuna and Dan Winnick. Jen, the first question I have is for you, because look, this is a tax podcast, or at least a tax policy podcast, but we haven't talked a lot of tax in the last couple of episodes. Remind everybody, why are we still talking about a budget bill and not yet a tax bill?
That is an excellent question. It is the link between reconciliation and the two-step process of reconciliation. So I always talk about this two-step process because usually we've already cleared the first step, and you have to clear the first step before you can even get to the policy bill, which is when we really talk about tax. But the first step is the passing of the budget resolution, where both chambers have to pass the identical budget resolution for reconciliation. And what that sets out is the budget, exactly how much money can be spent, or how many spending cuts in this case would have to be hit and targeted in order to then move on to the second bill, which would have to adhere to the restrictions set out in that budget resolution. So right now we're still in step one, trying to get consensus between the Senate and the House on the budget resolution before we can even move on to the tax policy piece.
Got it. So this is a necessary first step. And once we get this budget, it will tell us a lot, perhaps, about what the tax bill might look like, the size, the shape, the contours. But if I understand what you're saying, until we get that, we're not going to see. I mean, it would seem really unlikely we would see actual tax legislation from either committee. Is that fair to say? Until we get a budget, we're probably not going to see a bill?
Absolutely. Let me know how much we can spend, and then I'll tell you what's in it.
Perfect. Okay. I think that makes sense. Okay. So now, Dan, we finally got this House budget. It was big news. Could the House muscle through its budget? And it did, by the skin of its teeth, get its budget through. So there's a lot in there, right? Lots of committees of jurisdiction. We could spend episodes on it. But again, this is the tax podcast. So give us a quick highlight. Like, what are the key points in the House budget for tax? And what does that mean for what the tax bill might look like in the House?
The House budget resolution contemplates really a sprawling bill, one large bill that would encompass all of the priorities that the administration and Congress intend to pursue through reconciliation. And it passed very narrowly in the House, losing one Republican vote and getting no Democratic votes. So passed by 217 to 215. It envisions a $4.5 trillion increase in the deficit from tax cuts on a net basis, so taking into account both increases in taxes and decreases in taxes over the 10-year budget window. However, it also imagines trillions of dollars in spending cuts, at least $1.5 trillion minimum in spending cuts, but $2 trillion more, so $3.5 trillion in spending cuts. Now, this budget resolution was unique in that it imagines that if the spending cuts are not satisfied, then you can reduce the Ways and Means net tax cut authorization from $4.5 trillion down to $2.5 trillion. So it has this sort of dynamic impact between the spending cuts and the tax cuts. The other thing that was unusual about this House resolution is this budget resolution needs to pass the House and Senate and needs to tell both the House and the Senate what they need to do in a reconciliation bill. Well, this resolution the House passed only deals with the House side, so it isn't really a complete reconciliation budget resolution. So the Senate really would need to take it up as a vehicle and kind of do its own thing with its own committees, even if it largely agreed with the policy in the House bill.
Wow, that's a lot. Okay, so I have questions for you, Dan. Number one, the amount of spending cuts we're talking about here, help us understand, or those at home who maybe all these numbers just seem imaginary because they're so enormous. How ambitious are these spending cuts that are in this budget?
It can be hard even for members of Congress when they're talking about billions and trillions of dollars to realize sort of the magnitude of the different amounts we're discussing. There are not that many discretionary programs in the federal budget where you can get trillions of dollars of spending cuts within the window. And so these are quite ambitious cuts on the spending side that could be very politically challenging for a number of members.
In my many, many years of doing this, I don't ever remember spending cuts of this magnitude moving through, so it's possible. And for those that are concerned about the deficit, you may be cheering them on to find them. But of course, if they were easy, they probably would have already been done. So this is going to be challenging. Let me ask you another question, Dan. So if I understood, the amount given to the Ways and Means Committee, right, our tax writing committee, that they can add to the deficit, this is meaning then that they could have, for example, up to $4.5 trillion of, I mean, I'm using air quotes here, free tax cuts, right? We don't have to pay for these or offset them with tax increases if they were able to get that full $4.5 trillion. Is that what we're saying?
Yes, that's right. But that depends on the other committees coming up with spending cuts. So $4.5 trillion of tax cuts, that would largely give them room to extend the TCJA for much of the budget window without having new tax increases, and would also give room for additional tax cuts, such as some of the ones that the president has promised on the campaign trail, like no tax on tips or no tax on Social Security or no tax on overtime, but really only up to a limited point, and then policies like the domestic manufacturing deduction. So it's all sugar on the tax side, but you have to come up with these difficult spending cuts to get there.
Right. Somebody else has to take the medicine so that Ways and Means gets the sugar. Got it. All right, Jen, two questions for you. One, did this surprise you, either the way the House put it together or that it actually passed? And then I want you to take a few minutes to compare what the House approach has been to what the Senate has done on the budget.
I was surprised that the House was able to pass the resolution, although not as surprised now that you actually look at the resolution. I was surprised to see a $4.5 trillion deficit amount because of the concerns that we had heard from House Republicans about deficit spending in the bill. That's where what Dan mentioned, that $2 trillion link to spending cuts, really came in and saved the day and allowed this resolution to pass the House. The Senate, on the other hand, took a completely different approach. Remember earlier, we were talking about the one bill versus two bills. The Senate wanted two bills, one bill that would be easier to pass, easier to negotiate, to get a quick win for the administration and for the new Congress. That would include an increase in border security funding and defense spending, followed up by the second bill, which would tackle the tax cliff, would tackle the TCJA expirations. So the budget resolution that was passed by the Senate, I will note that the Senate passed its resolution days before the House had negotiated and passed its resolution. So they were kind of moving in different directions, the chambers. So this budget resolution is that first bill of the two-bill process that had been designed by Senate leadership. This budget resolution has an increase in border security spending of $175 billion and $150 billion increase in defense spending. Important to note, the key distinction between the two is that it does not have a placeholder or a deficit instruction for TCJA extensions. You know how Dan mentioned the $4.5 trillion deficit instruction? No such instruction in the Senate bill because it was just imagined as a completely different bill that they would utilize this budget resolution to deliver, a completely different bill, not the tax policy bill. So that was the Senate approach. It passed a number of days before the House had negotiated its budget resolution. So at some point, they are going to have to marry the two if we're going to start talking about the actual tax bill and the TCJA response.
Well, we're going to get to that, how they're going to advance this. But let me ask you a question, because it seems like a long time ago. It wasn't that long ago. We did an episode on one bill or two bills. That might have been in January. Do you think the two-bill strategy, the Senate strategy of two bills, is it dead?
You know what they say, it ain't over till it's over. I don't think it's dead. I do think that both chambers saw that the House was able to pass its resolution. The resolution is not something that would necessarily pass as easily, or it wasn't that easy, but it's not something that the Senate would necessarily pick up and just move unrevised. Depending on how long it takes them to get on the same page with respect to this tax resolution, you still have this budget resolution that's hanging out there, the two-step approach that's serving as a safety net in the case that the tax discussions just take much longer than anticipated. I don't think it's dead until they have passed a full resolution for the tax bill.
Totally agree with you, right? It's still there as the safety net in case this very audacious, ambitious one bill strategy that the House is pursuing fails. Got it. All right, Dan, back to you. So what now? Got a House budget you outlined for us, incredibly ambitious. Got a Senate budget, very narrow, small baby step on the pathway to legislative success this year. What do the House and Senate have to do now?
Well, the House and Senate will be coming back from recess. And over the next couple of weeks and months, they'll have to negotiate a budget resolution that satisfies both chambers' needs. As Jen mentioned, there is still the possibility of a 2025 budget resolution that could set up a two-bill approach. But as we get closer to the end of the fiscal year on September 30th, it becomes harder and harder to do a budget resolution for this fiscal year. If they decide to do a one-bill approach and do it for the next fiscal year, that really gives them a little bit more time to negotiate both the budget resolution and ultimately the bill. Now, we normally think of the budget resolution as the easier part of this process. It's really when you're negotiating the bill and you have to confront either tax increases or spending cuts more directly that we have seen in recent years, these bills run into problems at the member level. And so once they get past the budget resolution, this is really the easy step, and we'll move on to actually seeing how the actual bill gets negotiated. Now, one question is, do they finish off the budget resolutions before they really start to deal with the brass tacks of the text? Or do they take an approach where behind the scenes they try to negotiate in more detail exactly what policy they're passing and target the budget resolution more closely to that policy? This is always sort of a trade-off because just mechanically you have to pass the budget resolution first. But it would be a lot easier if you wrote the text and then make the budget resolution match the text rather than going the other way around. So I think the next couple of weeks are going to be critical to see what signs we see out of both the Senate and the House and how fast they're moving in the process and how fast they have something publicly available, or whether things start to quiet down or you even start to get mixed messages between the different players.
Mm-hmm. What comes first, chicken or egg, tax or budget, maybe in parallel? Look, we know that both tax writing staffs have been working on drafting, developing legislation, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they are able to tell those working on the budget, here's the number. This is the amount that we're going to need. It is a very iterative process, and the tax people may in the end be given a number and say, sorry, this is all we can agree to on the budget. You've got to make the tax bill fit as much as they'd like for it to go the other way around. All right, let me ask you both then. Let's conclude with a conversation on this point to bring it back to tax, right? We're so anxious to get the tax. Someday, I promise everybody, we will have a tax bill we can talk about, but we're not yet there. So let's just flash forward. The House and the Senate have somehow agreed upon a budget. They've outlined what the budget reconciliation bill is going to look like. Then what? Lay out the process to get to a tax bill after we get to that. Jen, you lived through this in 2017 with the TCJA. Remind us how this is going to go for getting a tax bill.
Yes, I did live through it with the TCJA. And the first step is they have to negotiate a bill. So that does take time unless they're doing this in tandem approach. But traditionally, you first negotiate your budget and then you negotiate your tax bill. I think they're doing a little bit of both now. So you would expect to have some sort of a lag in time where the chambers are putting together their tax proposals. But the next step, if they choose to mark up the bill, would be committees of jurisdiction would then process the bill through committee. With this one big, beautiful bill approach, there are many committees of jurisdiction that are instructed. Each of those committees would have to hold a markup and then vote the bill out of committee before it hits the House or the Senate floor. And it's a large number of committees. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 committees of jurisdiction instructed. So there are many committees of jurisdiction that would then have to mark up. Once those markups are done, then they go on the chamber floor. Usually the House moves first. So you see the House process starting, quickly followed by the Senate process. So Ways and Means in the tax space would release its chairman's mark, and that's processed by the committee. Also, there's an amendment process during that committee processing of the bill. Then, of course, once it moves to the floor, on the Senate side in particular, it would be open to amendment. So there would be a number of amendments that would either be factored into the bill before it hits the floor or potentially made on the floor while the members are considering the bill leading up to the chamber vote. That assumes they have the same bill. Both chambers have to have the same bill before it can be sent over to the president's desk. If they do not have consensus, if they do not have exactly the same bill, then it could potentially go to conference where both chambers negotiate that final bill, the final text. Because remember, the text has to be identical, cannot be off even by a period, has to be identical. And then it would move through both chambers again. And then it would be sent to the president's desk. So many procedural steps, even after we've cleared the budget resolution process between that point and signing. During the TCJ, it took about 7 weeks from the moment the House Ways and Means Committee released its bill to signing.
That was incredible. I mean, that was one of the criticisms of the TCJA, the speed with which it moved. That could definitely happen again. But boy, that was really unusually fast. So, Dan, look, you lived through your own budget reconciliation bill, Build Back Better. Do you remember how long it took from the moment that you had a budget agreement till the House passed that bill, right? It went through committee. The committee marked it up, approved it. Then it went eventually to the House. That was a longer process back in 2021, wasn't it, or 2022?
2021 and 2022. That's right. So in that bill, there was a budget resolution agreed to, and then some time elapsed before the Ways and Means Committee and the other committees of jurisdiction, as with the House proposed bill, it was a Build Back Better in the form it was in at that time, crossed many committees of jurisdiction. So all the committees had to consider it. Then it went to the House Budget Committee and eventually to the House Rules Committee. And there was a longer gap than you had seen in TCJA. That House Rules Committee meeting is, of course, another opportunity to modify or amend the bill before it passes off the House floor. And in that case was an opportunity for negotiation because, as is the case in the House this year, the committees have much larger Republican majorities than the House floor. So they can lose some votes in committee that on the House floor they can't afford to lose. So there might be, compared to TCJA, greater negotiation between the committee process and the floor than you had seen. And then when it goes over to the Senate, we're used to situations where the Senate's really the limiting factor. And that was the case for Democrats in what eventually became the Inflation Reduction Act. And it was the case for Republicans in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So the Senate bill ultimately is what was the real bill. For the first time in many, I think, decades, the House has a narrower majority in the Senate than the Senate. And so the House always has to go first under the Constitution. So the House passes a bill, then the Senate amends that bill. But whether the House will just accept the Senate amendments this time is not at all clear. And so that conference process or that process for reconciling differences might take a lot longer than what we have seen in past bills and really might require some difficult compromises between the chambers. So when I think of what are the biggest differences from what we've seen before, assuming everything goes relatively smoothly, I think that resolving differences stage where you have a conference or sending bills back and forth is where we might see the most difference from what we've seen in past reconciliation bills that we remember.
It's a complicated process. You know, again, 2017 was pretty unique in the speed with which it moved. Build Back Better was kind of a more normal process in the amount of time it took. But let me ask you both this. So let's conclude with this question. I'll ask you, Jen, then I'll ask you, Dan. There's been talk, I think the Ways and Means Chairman Jason Smith has said they're going to pass this bill by Memorial Day. Jen, not asking you to say that the chairman of the committee is wrong, but do you view that as a highly likely event or less likely?
I look at the calendar, and the longer we're talking about this, these are all weeks that where they're not negotiating the resolution and then the tax bill. But I will note the time between the budget resolution passing in TCJA and the announcement of the markup, the introduction of the chairman's mark at Ways and Means, it was about a week, 1 week between that first step clearing and then seeing the legislative text. So it's certainly possible. It's a very aggressive timeline because we don't have many weeks left. I mean, we talked about all of this procedural process that they have to clear. They have to clear step one, then they have to negotiate step two. If they're not already negotiating it in tandem, then they have to move through the many committees of jurisdiction and markups if they choose to mark up the bill. Then you have the amendment process. I think it's a very aggressive timeline. Aspirational, certainly, but it's going to take a lot quicker movement than what we've seen to date.
Dan, do you agree with that?
I do. The process for moving a bill through, there are a lot of chances for there to be bumps in the road. If they have a budget resolution by Memorial Day, they'd be in pretty impressive shape compared to where they are at the moment. Having a bill passed, negotiated, and on the president's desk by then seems very ambitious to me, but we've been surprised before. And sometimes it feels like a tax bill is not going to move until it does, and then 15 minutes later, it's happened. So these things can feel like they're not moving and then move very quickly.
When they're motivated, it can be true. But sometimes what motivates Congress are deadlines. So if we think looking forward, like what are real deadlines? You've got August recess. So that would suggest there's a window open in July, maybe to get this done before they go on their August recess. Because when they come back in September, they're going to be negotiating funding the government again, right? We just extended government funding through 9/30. So it seems like they would have to get that done before they got on August recess. Then I guess the next deadline is September 30 because the budget reconciliation instruction would expire then, but they're going to be hung up on funding. And then if they miss that deadline, then we're back into the next fiscal year. Am I correct? They would then have to pass another budget for FY26 to restart this process all over again. Do I have that right?
That is correct. I mean, they have not blown that deadline previously, so it's actually an issue of first impression for the Senate parliamentarian, whether or not they could still use that fiscal year 25 budget resolution after the expiration of the fiscal year. So tick tock, the clock is ticking for that budget resolution. If you look at previous precedent, they have not tried to push the envelope with respect to that deadline.
Dan, final word. Isn't the ultimate deadline here really December 31st? The ultimate political deadline in this whole process, December 31st?
I agree with that. You could imagine retroactively extending some of the TCJA tax cuts, but I think the pressure to deal with the individual tax rate increases will be fairly strong so that December 31st is the real deadline. And so if I were advising a member who had a strong priority in the bill, you might want to hold out until that point to make sure you get it in. And conversely, the sort of unifying point about extending those tax cuts, that's going to come to a head on December 31st. So that's a real deadline that I'm looking to.
I agree. But before then, we need to see if the House and the Senate can reconcile their budgets to start this process as we've discussed. And I guess that's the next big thing on the horizon. So Jen, Dan, I am sure we are going to be back with an episode on that topic. Thank you for your thoughts today. Such an interesting conversation today. And I promise you, we will get to, you know, an actual tax bill and tax proposals in due course. But you see, other drama has to play out before we can get there. As Dan and Jen said, first, the House and Senate are going to have to reach an agreement on a budget. And if it wasn't clear, that's not going to be easy, because the House and the Senate have two very different theories on how to deal with the cost of the expiring TCJA provisions. As you heard today, the House plan is to give tax writers up to $4.5 trillion of, you know, free money to spend on those tax cuts without having to raise taxes to offset those costs. Although this does come with the bitter pill of cutting spending by trillions, something that's never easy to do. Whereas, as you heard in the last episode, the Senate wants to use this idea of current policy baseline as a way to assume that these extensions cost nothing. This is what the House and the Senate need to reconcile. Spending cuts that the Senate may simply not be willing to accept, or is it current policy baseline, which the House Republican deficit hawks may gag on? As you can imagine, the House and the Senate appear to be very far apart on this question at the moment. Who wins this battle, if anyone? Well, that's the next chapter in this saga of the tax cliff, and we will be here for all of it. With that, thanks again for tuning in to Catching Up on Capitol Hill. Take care, and I hope to see you soon.